Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm chatting with Cole, known for his RLCS commentary and content production. How did that all begin, like your first steps in Rocket League?
First steps in Rocket League was playing a little game called... You got it off the top of your head?
Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket Power Battle Cars.
Hey, yeah, there we go. Lovely. Cheers, mate.
Cheers to that. Point is, Rocket League came out, and you were one of the early, I guess, titans of the game with Team Rocket.
Yeah.
How did that play into your success early on in Rocket League?
When Rocket League came out, those of us who were in the Battle Cars community, we were basically gods.
Yeah, hindsight is 2020 though, isn't it? You were fortunate enough at some point to be able to quit your writing job, not because you wanted to, but because you felt like it was worth taking this opportunity while you could. What was that period of your life like where you were juggling, I could go full-time here, knowing that it would give you more opportunities?
Exhausting, in a word. Rewarding as well.
So, do you want to tell us about one of your first questions? Because we have Tom Deacon, who's the host.
Oh, God, who doesn't know me, doesn't know...
Doesn't know you, doesn't know your knowledge of Rocket League, also doesn't know any of the players, because
exactly.
He's just hosting three different esports events.
So, I go down there, and, you know, I said I woke up in Norwich with my girlfriend. I remember the morning it happened, I was saying to her, I don't want to go. If there'd have been a wizard who could have said, yeah, we can get you out of this, just click your fingers, I would have clicked my fingers so quick. I did not want to do it.
You mentioned about AI, but do you foresee a world where you as a writer will become a writer of esports, like a top writer in the space, or do you think that journey is too difficult to get to?
I would love for our videos to be nominated for an award. You were nominated for an esports award, weren't you? You went to the esports awards show. I saw that earlier. That's what reminded me of it. So well done, well deserved.
Best analyst of the year.
Well, you are fantastic. Truly, you
was
are fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah.
No, you are.
Yeah,
Pokemon stuff, mate. Even if you haven't heard of Frederick Mahican, how can you not have heard of him? He won the Pokemon Championship in 1972.
Called Frederick Mahican, Cole. Don't be silly.
Anyway, right.
Make sure to follow for future episodes. Let us know who you want to hear from next. I hope you enjoy this conversation as we get to know Cole beyond the game. Anyway, we're here with Cole. Cole being a Rocket League commentator and one of my best friends.
Who uses Batmobile, by the way.
Who uses Batmobile in Rocket League. And I think this is one of the podcasts I'm looking forward to the most because I feel like you're one of those people who goes underappreciated on broadcast because your role a lot of the time is to set up other people.
Okay.
You're also one of the people behind loads of video content that happens in the RLCS. You do a lot of writing. Like anything I've written in my life has probably gone via you to correct it, to make it better. I had a whole website with like thousands of words on it at one point and you went through and just proofread that. You know, like you've done so much for me and for a lot of people out there they don't realize. So I'm really happy to talk to you and sort of share that side of you. So welcome.
You're making me a bit emotional, Greg, and that's a truly, genuinely lovely intro. That's lovely. But to make it clear, you've also done a lot for me. I feel that you and I have always had a sort of beautifully symbiotic relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, we slot together. I tend to collect people that I slot together quite well with. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure we'll get onto Stumpy, and he's someone as well that, you know, his skills and my skills sort of go like that, and you and I are the same, which is lovely. Plus, I love proofreading. If you ever want any more, just
Because I felt guilty for a while because I got you to do so much of it. And then you were literally like, no, I enjoy this. Send me anything you've written and I will read it and make it better.
Yeah. You know, in another life, I think that my role would have been proofreading, editing, if not writing my own stuff, working on others, because I do love that. Whether or not AI steals that away from me remains to be seen. But for now, I can still claim that as a human, I like to think I'm quite good at it.
Yeah, I mean, you said about being that symbiotic relationship. I did a talk at schools, mostly my old schools, but I've done a few other places, talking about how to get into a passion industry. And there's actually a slide in it that just has a picture of you and me on the desk together with the text, "My mate Cole."
Aww.
And the whole thing of like, you need that person who has something that you don't have and you have something they don't have and that you can lean on. Because for me, I've had a lot of success in times with things I've written that have purely been well written. Like for my pitch deck for this whole podcast, my website, all these different things that I've written that you've gone through and made better. But then equally, you're now a Rocket League analyst and caster.
You've taught me so much about Rocket League. You certainly, I've never claimed to be the most knowledgeable analyst at anything. There are many people out there, you know, you, Johnny Boy, Jorby, that can sort of just look at the game and feel the flow of it a lot better than I can and spot the minutiae and the macro as well of what cards are doing, what players are doing, how they've changed. That's not my skill. But then when someone else mentions it, I believe I can sort of build upon it and flow it into a story and spin it into something beautiful beyond the, oh, that person's switched something up now. But again, basically what I'm saying is I agree with you that I've sort of found a way to tailor what I can do with what others can do.
Exactly. And that's why I wanted to bring you here to sort of talk through your story and how you got to where you are now. So now, as we mentioned, you're a Rocket League commentator. So you commentate in the RLCS mostly with Stumpy, your co-caster and content partner and everything. You also make a lot of video content, which was sort of how a lot of people first got to know you was through the sub part. Well, it was Team Rocket channel, I guess.
Ancient tutorials.
But in HD, doing tutorials. Yeah. And a lot of that came down to your voiceover and script work with the humor, with a bit of Rocket League knowledge as well, all that kind of stuff all adding together. How did that all begin? Like your first steps in Rocket League?
First steps in Rocket League was playing a little game called... You got it off the top of your head?
Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket Power Battle Cars.
Hey. Yeah, there we go. Lovely. Cheers, mate.
Cheers to that. We can't both drink as a podcast. We can't take a sip at the same time.
Okay. I'm glugged. I'm a glugged man.
Go on, talk about
SART. Yeah, so I played SART BC back in 2009. I basically, I was 16 then. I was born in 93. And I used to love going on forums, like gaming forums, things like that. I've always enjoyed reading and watching gaming probably more than playing it. As I've told you before, I'm not actually much of a sit down and game for 7 hours gamer, right? I used to love looking at the gaming news and the controversy and, oh, this person said that. No way, he said that about the Xbox 360, you know, all of that stuff. So I used to go on the PlayStation forums. And then one day, I guess I came home from school and I went on the EU official PlayStation 3 forums. And there was a little post that said, my game has a demo. And this, in 2009, indie games, not really as much of a thing as they are now. You'd buy your Call of Duties and your FIFAs. Every now and then an indie game would come out that got hype. Like, do you remember Fat Princess? You ever heard of that game?
No.
It basically, some people listening will remember what I'm talking about. It was one of the early PlayStation exclusive indie games that they invested in. It was like a top-down MOBA type thing, I guess you'd call it. It's pretty fun.
Indie games tended to be PC only, really, because
they were bigger on Steam.
To be able to
convert
them onto a platform was always tricky. So console indie games were quite hard to come
And they're often very like, they seemed low budget. They were they were £3.49. You play them for 5 minutes, like rubber ducks racing, like silly things like that. Anyway, this guy called Psyonix, I think it was Psyonix Adam, made a post on the EU. I think it was Adam Beckwith, yeah, but it might have been somebody else. Made a post saying, there's a demo for my game on the PSN store. And I thought, oh my God, not only has this person made a game, like an indie game, it wasn't really a concept for me, he's also reached out to people. Because also back then, you know, the whole sort of loud social media managers and, you know, Tesco's having a go at Waitrose on Twitter, that didn't exist either. It was all very proper. There was a big gap between developers and companies and people. So I thought I'd check out this game. Because when I clicked on it, the screenshot looked cool. It was this car hitting a ball. I was like, oh, that looks fun. And I downloaded the demo. The demo was pretty much the full game, but with a 1 hour 30 time limit. So after that, it would cut you off. I don't know if it was forever or like, you know, have to wait a week to play again or whatever. And after my first game, I was like, I have to buy this. And it was £8, Gregan. 16-year-old, £8. Like, that's how much I instantly knew that Battle Cars was a game for me. And it all started from that forum post.
I guess demos now are almost like mandatory, and people are like, you have to put a demo out, you have to put an alpha out, you have to put
20 minutes of polished gameplay out on YouTube, all of these ways that people can find your game. But yeah, back then it was purely word of mouth, and that led me to the Silex forums and the little community that would become Rocket League.
Well, you certainly weren't searching for the game through the title. That would have been that would have been challenging. Rocket League now being the sequel to it in some ways.
We didn't like the name.
Didn't like it. It's too simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't summarize it well enough.
Genuinely, we wanted it to be more, I mean, I'm jumping ahead because it was a whole ordeal getting Rocket League made, even on our community side, let alone the developer's side. But when they said the new game is finally going to happen, it's greenlit, we're working on it. It's called Rocket League. And we all went, what's a Rocket League?
Doesn't make any sense.
What does that mean? Yeah, supersonic acrobatic rocket-powered battle cars makes so much more sense.
Yeah, I guess you'd probably want car in the title in your head. You'd be like, you want some, like, flying cars or something.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Like car football or whatever. You know, you want something there.
We also liked the novelty of SARTBC, which, by the way, SARTBC, I think, has become the accepted initialism. There's also SARP. There was SARPBC. But I think SARPBC is how it came to be known retroactively.
Yeah, I was thinking now, like SOCAR, as in the game mode, the in-game car football. That's quite a good name for a game, SOCAR.
It is. It's very American, though.
SOCAR League.
Is the problem. SOCAR League. It's, yeah. It sounds a little bit, now I hear that, like something that is like a cheap mobile game.
Yeah, I guess that wouldn't go down well in Europe as well, would it?
No.
Would they want to translate? Anyway, point is, Rocket League came out, and you were one of the early, I guess, titans of the game with Team Rocket.
Yeah.
Just because you had this experience that no one else could have by playing the prequel.
Yeah.
How did that play into your success early on in Rocket League?
So I played Battle Cars on and off because I went to uni in time.
What game name? Battle Cars.
Also Battle Cars. Yeah. SARTBC and Battle Cars. I didn't even think, but that's the two sort of things that we'd call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I played Battle Cars for 6 years off and on. I was never the best, but I could go in a lobby and play with the best. You know what I mean? And be all right. I was never Cronovi, if anybody remembers that name. And then, yeah, finally in 2015, Rocket League came out. And it was this, you know, overnight success story. Most of the people listening to this probably remember that day. It came out on PlayStation Plus for free. And suddenly it blows up and a million people are playing it. And they're talking about it on television. And it's sponsoring soccer shirts and all that. And when Rocket League came out, those of us who were in the Battle Cars community, we were basically gods. Because we could do, you know, basic aerials. We could hit the ball consistently. We could dodge it into the net. We wouldn't just let it roll past us every time. And that made us amazing. And a lot of us became streamers or wrote YouTube videos or, well, mainly those ones really at the start. Mm.
Well, I found you through Cronovi. So Cronovi was the big name at the start.
He was so good.
He was so good.
I still maintain he's the best compared to everyone else. Like everyone, I mean, I'm getting a bit Rocket League-y here, but everyone's talking about Zed at the moment. Mm. I think that Cronovi over everyone else was still the biggest sort of relative gap the game's ever had.
I think that's typical with every game, though. At the start, there will be someone who gets that far ahead, because the more people play, the larger population of good players there are, so the gaps tend to shrink. But yeah, Cronovi at the time, there's also the fact that he was North America, and the only player who could potentially be compared to him was in Europe.
Cooksier.
Cooksier. Yeah. So, like, you never got to see them against each other, which is where the RLCS excitement was so good. And but yeah, back then, I found you through Cronovi, because Cronovi would have this occasional message come up, or it would be in his description, which said, also check out my friends. And it would be Gibbs, I believe Law.
That's like a Nightbot thing.
Yeah.
You? Yeah.
And I think Law was one of them back in the day.
Oh, Law. I forgot about the name Law. Yeah, okay.
And then I think you were one of the other ones. So I checked you out, and I go, oh, it's a British guy. And then started watching. And you know what my first message was in your stream chat?
Hello.
No, I said, hey, do you find it harder to play on stream versus off stream? And you answered it, and I was like, oh, yeah, this guy seems really cool. Because at the time, I started streaming Rocket League a bit, and I was like, I find it really hard to play on stream.
Yeah.
I think at the time, you were playing in tournaments and stuff, and I think you were the weakest player on the team, but also because you were streaming.
It was,
you know, you're reading chat. You didn't really care as much about winning compared to a lot of people.
I've always gone for duos. I like working as a duo or as a trio. I like, I'm a team player, like, at my core. I think a lot of streamers, you know, and a lot of people in esports, there's this sort of mantra of needing to go it alone. But yeah, so at the time Rocket League came out, I played with a guy called Doomsy, who's now my editor all these years later, so I still work with him. But he was always twice as good at the game as I was, and that's where he and I first diverged, because we had this joint stream. At the time, it was called Team Rocket RL, and you know, bless him, he wanted to be good at the game. He wanted to win tournaments. And I did too. But I also liked reading chat while I tried to do it. Which, so I can see in hindsight, I'm sorry, Doomsy, that's not really on for me to be in a tournament reading chat, is it? Sorry, mate.
Well, you used to get a lot of viewers back in the day, yeah, as well at the start, because Rocket League did blow up early on. The best players did get a lot of viewers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of the top streamers would try Rocket League and, you know, some of them would collaborate with the top players and be like, oh my God, this guy's so, so good. And you didn't really... I guess your YouTube channel did a bit, but then you didn't really fully commit to the content creation route. Why didn't you give it your all?
So by that point, I'd been through uni. I had a full-time job. I was a technical author. So I had a job that I loved, actually. Basically, I took creative writing at uni. Got a first.
Go on.
I did. And then, you know, the classic, out of university, desperate trying to find a job. Oh, no, I'm useless. What am I going to do? Then eventually I found one. Working at a software company, the Zero Mat Access Software. And my job was basically, I did copywriting for the marketing team, and I also did like instruction manuals for people much smarter than me. So I'd liaise with the technical team and go, guys, is this what you're trying to say in English? And they go, oh, no, actually it's this. And then I'd put it in a sense that, you know, the end user could understand and do this complicated coding stuff with the software that I didn't know how to do myself. So it was... you know, trying to write for people smarter than myself, like a Hollywood writer writing a genius. You know what I mean? You got to make it sound like you know what you're talking about, even though you don't. So that was my job and I loved it. They treated me very well. They were excellent there. And then Rocket League came out. Rocket League came out July 2015 and I started working there March 2015. So I was only a few months into working there, trying to be my best. You know, that's my life, my role in life. I found it. Then this game comes out and blows up. And I'd get home from work. I lived in Newmarket at the time, and I'd come back from Cambridge. So that's about, a half-hour train or whatever it is, plus the journey to the train station. So, you know, adding 2 hours each day after everything between actually getting back to my chair and then streaming.
It was a 9-to-5 job, was it?
It was flexible, but it could be 10 to 6, could be 9 to 5. But yeah, those hours. And I also lived in a house with flatmates where it's like thin walls, you know, they didn't want me go like loudly streaming until all hours. And I only had all hours cause I'd get back from work late. So it never really quite worked. I was like, oh, what a goal. Do you know what I mean? If it became late enough. So, I mean, also that's part of it. It's also the fact that I didn't really know what I had. I knew YouTube. I knew that on YouTube, let's say 100,000 views is a lot. I didn't realize that on Twitch, and it sounds stupid now, I didn't realize that 1,000 viewers was, oh my God, you could make this your career. That's what we got every weekend, like with ESL tournaments and stuff. And so I, it's safe to say, didn't monetize back then as well as I could have. Even on the average streams, we'd get 200, 300. And I didn't know that's a mate, like, oh my God, quick, really hit that. Do as much as you can.
You weren't the only one, to be fair. There was a lot, like Kronovi didn't. When like he did for a bit, but then he would, you know, focus on being a pro and all that kind of stuff. And I think the big thing about it was you guys weren't doing it to be big streamers, right? It just sort of happens.
Yeah, me and Doomsy just loved it. We discovered something, and suddenly we'd be having the same. Can I swear on this? The same bullshit conversations that we'd always been having, just him and me. And then suddenly people in chat would be saying, lull. I'm like, what's lull? What does that mean? Do you know what I mean? Like, pog, all these new terms that I'm learning. And we're saying stuff and the people in the chat are reacting. And it was just, you know, a fun novelty. It was great. But yeah, the thought of it becoming a job in any way didn't really cross our minds for a long time.
I guess in esports in general, there's very few people who are good at the game, but also just funny guys. And you and Doomsy were funny guys on stream, entertaining, but also winning.
Whereas winning like 7-0 as well.
Yeah, so like that was like the dream combo. Because if you watch a streamer now, like think of the all Fortnite era.
Yeah.
Someone who was entertaining and also just getting victory royales over and over again would pop off and be the biggest streamers. Same kind of thing happens.
It's happened to Courage, for example. Yeah. He was always funny and likable, but also I think he worked hard to get better at the game, and it's worked out obviously well for him.
And for you, you obviously had all the other things you're juggling, and you felt like it was just a side thing.
Yeah.
So you didn't realize what you had was so special, and I guess in hindsight, you know, maybe if you committed a bit better, maybe you could have been one of the biggest content creators. You could be the Sunless Khan of Rocket League, and you did do some big pop-off videos.
Yeah, so basically every now and then, because I'm a writer first and foremost, it's what I took at uni, it's what, you know, we were having this conversation earlier, what I believe my innate skill is writing, as opposed to hosting, producing, casting, whatever it is. I think that I've worked at, but the writing is something that's, you know, in my back pocket. And every now and then, you know, even though I was loving streaming and stuff, I'd be like, right, I'm ready. I need to make a YouTube video. I need to create something in that regard. And I'd do it, and then we put it out, and it would go really well. Zoom. But again, I didn't really understand YouTube. I didn't realize that you had to keep doing that. I thought, oh, I'll just do it every few months. It will get a million hits, and I'll do the next one. But obviously, there's a diminishing return there. I did put up a 2v2, just raw gameplay, no commentary, nothing, just raw gameplay against Gibbs. And it was 0-0, and then I won't spoil the result, but one team won in overtime. And I called it, like, best defensive game ever. And it got, like, 300,000 views. And then no one said to me, and I didn't figure out, should probably upload another one of those. Probably
just keep uploading it
every single day. Just keep doing it. Eventually it'll go down, but you might make, you know, £20,000 by it. I was like, yeah, that'll do. That's cool. Anyway, see you in 6 months, YouTube.
Yeah, hindsight is 2020 though, isn't it? But yeah. You were fortunate enough at some point to be able to quit your writing job, not because you wanted to, but because you felt like it was worth taking this opportunity while you could. What was that period of your life like where you were juggling, I could go full-time here, knowing that it would give you more opportunities?
Exhausting, in a word. Rewarding as well. I'm a very all or nothing person. I think I'm similar to you. You know, when I dive into fitness, I've had enough of being unfit. I'm diving into it completely, right? For better or for worse. It's not the best way of doing things, but it's the way that I've learned to sort of yield in my own way over the years. So I was working full-time for another 3 years after Rocket League came out. In that time, Doomsy went his own separate way. Like, we still stayed friends and still worked together, but with regards to sort of teaming and him creating his sort of style of content and me staying, getting gradually worse at the game and finding a community that appreciated that of me. I picked up Stumpy in that time. I think he was 2016 or something. Streamed with him a bunch and then at some point said, hey, do you want to come on and do this full time with me? Which he did. He's always said it's the worst business offer he's ever seen, that I offered him 50-50. But that's sort of
he
me
said
though.
That on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. He said it many times, but that is me. Like, for me, it just sort of makes sense. Like, what I could have offered him 75-25, and that day he said he was available, maybe he would have said, oh, I can't, I'm out with mates. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe I lost X pounds in the short term, but in the long term it works out. You
it
know?
Also becomes a bit awkward when the situation comes where you need him to work harder.
Yeah.
You then go, well, I guess I'll give you more percentage now.
Yeah, exactly.
From the off, you're like, right, you do a bit more than you're expected to at times, and I'll do a bit more than I'm expected to at times.
Yeah.
We're both in it together.
And it stayed like that in the years following. Like, over the years, there's stuff that he does. Like, he does all the business back-end stuff, like, you know, speaking to accountants and stuff like that. He comes to me and goes, oh, Cole, can you send this money? Oh, here's this money. I'm like, cool, cheers, mate. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's excellent at that. And, you know, he does the clipping for our videos and stuff like that, whereas I do the script writing. So we've always, like I said earlier, sort of had this way of slotting. But to answer your question, sorry, I've gone way off kilter. You asked me why and when I made the decision and what it was like.
What was that period of your life like when you were sort of thinking, do I jump into this full time?
So I moved house a few times in that time, just to like different flatmates and stuff. And took streaming seriously, not seriously, all in, all out, really pushing it. Hey, we've hit 100 subs, 24-hour stream. Oh, we can't do it for 2 weeks. We're back to 40. And that's split between the two of us, you know? So it was looking like it was sort of drifting away. And then in 2018, Stumpy was working full-time at the bank, like just being like, he's always told me it wasn't the call center, but we'll call it the call center stuff. No, that's what it is. He's always told me that it wasn't selling PPI. But I always say, oh, you were selling PPI, weren't you? He was like, no, I'm giving it back. So tell him that he sells PPI next time you see him. And tell him that he's got a PPI. Never thought of that joke. God. Anyway, finally.
Script writing going on right there.
Yeah. Finally, I got retroactively go back and insert that joke into somewhere it was devastating to him. Finally, the moment came where, you know, we built up to 100 subs, 200 subs, 350, whatever. And we were starting to make not a substantial amount of money, but more and more money, almost enough to pay our rent. And I'd moved in with my friend who'd bought a house, so I was paying cheap rent and cheap bills and stuff like that. So shout out Josh, couldn't have done it without you, right? And sort of Stumpy and I were having these conversations like, we've either got to do this or we're just going to burn ourselves out and we have to just stop and live our lives, which is fine and fair and would have also been a good decision, you know? But he first went part-time at his job selling PPI with his PPI.
Give him PPI back.
You know that one, allegedly. And then a few months later, I quit my job which broke my heart because I loved my boss. Mm. My boss at the company is basically, he was the senior technical author. I was his apprentice, you know, and everything went through him and then to me. It was always directly him and me. And I remember the day that I was saying to like Stumpy, like, I'm going to do it on this day. I'm going to give him my notice, calling my mum, like, Mum, should I do it? Yes, you should. They're all amazing. My grandma saying I should do it. My girlfriend, you know, not pushing me, but really enabling me to make this terrifying decision. The day that I was going to do it at work, I had my like employee review and my boss gave me a glowing review. And I remember it because I was about to say it and he said the words to me, I swear to God, he said, I don't know what we'd do without you. And I was like,
no.
I was like, thank you. And I actually bottled it. I went back to my desk and I thought, oh my God, I can't do it. I'm not someone who like, oh, I owe it to the company. I didn't owe it to the company, but I had so much respect for my boss and he made me a better, different sort of writing, technical writing, but he made me a better writer to this day, the sort of advice that he gave and the feedback. And you know how I'm quite brutal? You send me stuff and I'm like, just get rid of this paragraph. Mm-hmm. He taught me that and I have taken that on, right? So then I went outside. I was like, I just need 5 minutes to get some fresh air. And he's like, yeah, that's fine. And I called my mum. I was like, Mum, should I really, I think it was my mum, maybe my grandma, someone. I was like, should I really do this? Like, I don't know if I want to. And she was like, you really should because you will regret it in 10 years. Even if you and Stumpy only have a year, 6 months of doing it, you'll always regret more not doing it than you would have doing it. Mm-hmm. So I went back up and I said to my boss, sorry, can I have 5 minutes? And I said to him, I said that there's no other company that I'd leave for, but there's this thing that I've been doing in the background and it's my only chance to do it.
Mm.
And that was that. I did give more notice than I needed to. I gave 3 months notice so he had time to replace me. Because what I didn't want to do was be like, bye, and then he's just being overwhelmed. Because by that point, I was getting more and more responsibility, you know?
They didn't know what to do without you, so they had to find someone else.
They actually hadn't by the time I left. 3 months later, they still hadn't. They did just after. Oh, I think they were in the process of bringing someone in as I left.
But that's not what you want to hear, is it?
No, I got a bit offended as well. Like, they were doing company meetings, and they were like, oh, you can stay there. I was like, all right, fine. I'm not going to sell your secrets. I was like, I felt a bit left out.
But no, that was a big, scary moment for you, and I remember being there and trying to support you with that.
Everyone that I spoke to, you included.
I think that was a big factor, was by going full-time, your community then became more generous.
They did. And the day we announced it, it was gifted sub central, you know, because it's new and exciting.
Mm. And then you started to find other opportunities, which is the next exciting step for you. Now, I had Stumpy on before, and I don't want this to sound like I'm bragging, but I get great joy out of seeing other people I've helped succeed.
You do.
And seeing you now, knowing where you were when I first convinced you to be a caster... So do you want to talk about from your point of view? Because I know Stumpy gave his point of view, but what was your point of view like when I told you that I'd recommended you to cast Gfinity?
Well, do you want to say your point of view? Go on, I'll flip it. Tell me this little story. So for context, right, we're going back in time a little bit. I was still in full-time work, mm-hmm. right? Streaming, it's going relatively well, but full-time work, then I come home and stream. That's mm-hmm. what I do. Then I get an email.
So I was thinking about this actually earlier today, about what it was like, because Gfinity were like, we're going to start a European show. We need 6 people to work on it.
Were you the first they reached out to? I went along
and met them at an event, Classic Greg and that.
Of course you did.
But they were like, look, we got Onset here. He's one of our talent. We're getting him on. I was like, great. We'd love to have talent from outside come in and work on it. And it was like, well, we want to get Johnny. We want to get Shogun. It's like, of course. Like mm-hmm. at the time it was me, Johnny and Shogun. And below us, there was this massive void before you got to the next people who just had no experience.
And that was from Insomnia, right? Like, you guys were doing Insomnia
a little bit, you know, community and casting. Shogun was on RLCS. Johnny's stream was doing well. I think I hadn't done DreamHack yet at that time. I had, but I couldn't remember. But yeah, like, Shogun was on RLCS. So it was like there was a massive gap between us and the rest just from experience and like names in the community. And then they were like, we need 2 more people. Who would you recommend? And I genuinely couldn't think of anyone. And I was like, well, you're going to have to create casters.
Mm.
I was like, there's these 2 guys who are really entertaining streamers, and I think they would make a great like comedy casting duo. Teach them a bit of Rocket League, and they'll be as good as gold. Because mm-hmm. in my mind, I thought you'd both be great casters. So I recommended you there and then, you and Stumpy. And then I went to message you and said, hey, do you be interested? Like, I didn't tell you I'd recommended you. I just said, would you be interested in doing this thing? To which you responded...
No, probably not. I say the RLCS was in season 4 by then.
Yeah,
I've not really been following the RLCS that much. I've been focusing on my work, and I just wouldn't want to ruin the show. So mm-hmm. thank you, but no, I'll pass.
And then I basically went, well, sorry, I've already recommended you.
Yeah, I got an email a week later saying, hey, Cole, we want you on this show. Do you want to accept? I remember turning to my girlfriend and going like, oh, and she was like, just do it. The first morning of it. So basically, at this time, I lived in Cambridge. My girlfriend lived in Norwich. And I was sort of streaming as well. So it was when I was in my peak exhaustion, trying to keep the stream going, relatively long-term relationship, you know, working forward, back, staying fit, you know, doing insanity workouts, trying to be on camera the best I can be and all that. And then good old Gregan chucked into the mix, going to London every Saturday to do something I'd never done before. It's not like I did some community casting.
You've never casted anything. It was literally...
Our 24-hour stream when we celebrated 100 Twitch subs, which, by the way, what a lot of streaming for 100 Twitch subs. But anyway, me and Stumpy, so 50 subs each, we were like, let's do a 24-hour stream. We did it at Stumpy's house, and Shogun was there, because Shogun was my friend from the Battle Cars days. And we did some streaming. We did some casting. We casted Doomzy winning the Gfinity Elite Series. Have you ever heard the name Doom2E? Do you know that reference?
Yeah.
That was what that was. Where I wrote Doom... Oh, we were drunk after like 18 hours of streaming. I wrote Doomzy on my chest and lifted like, Doomzy! But because I wrote it drunk, upside down and backwards, the S I did backwards, so it was Doom2E. Doom2E! As we did like a viewing party. This wasn't on the Gfinity broadcast. This was like a viewing party.
Recasted
it. That was Stumpy's only ever cast. I think I'd done an Insomnia as the extra man. Like, no one was watching.
I got you along to Insomnia.
Yeah, so I think I had actually done that before, but I was, you know, I didn't do the finals. I did nothing in front of the crowd. I had like a sort of dark room, light on my face, little like expensive webcam, and I felt, oh my God, this is so much pressure, you know? Mm. And then you're saying, oh, come to this studio thing.
Because we didn't really know how big it was going to be in terms of production stuff. We kind of had a feeling it was going to be reasonably big.
Mm.
But then that first day on the broadcast, there's a lot of players you don't know. Because let's be honest, it wasn't if you knew RLCS players, if you knew the players below the RLCS players.
Please don't tell me you're getting at what I think you're going to be getting at.
So do you want to tell us about one of your first questions? Because we have Tom Deacon, who's the host.
Oh, God, who doesn't know me, doesn't know
your knowledge of Rocket League, also doesn't know any of the players because he's just hosting three different esports events.
So I go down there and, you know, I said I woke up in Norwich with my girlfriend. I remember the morning it happened, I was saying to her, I don't want to go. Just don't make me go. I'll call in sick. Like, I really just did. If there'd have been a wizard who could have said, yeah, we can get you out of this, just click your fingers, I would have clicked my fingers so quick. I did not want to do it. But yeah, I got on the train, went down there. I think we stayed, did we used to, it must have been a Saturday morning, and then I
we
came
used to
down
stay
and
the
did
night
it on a day.
Over, I think.
Did we?
Or stay the night.
So maybe it was Friday.
Depending on the season, because one season was in the morning, one season was in the evening, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. So maybe I went down that morning then. Yeah. So I was doing it that day. So there wasn't time for us all to sit the night before, have a pint, talk it through.
No.
Just sort of rocked up there. Suddenly I'm in the green room. This is Ariel Free. This is Tom Deacon. Hello. This is the cameras. I'm your producer. Have you got this? I'm like, yeah. Like, imagine you've never gone on a television set.
Yeah.
And then you are the talent. So then, yeah.
You're the Rocket League expert.
The expert, yeah. And
tell us about the notes as well, because you didn't know any of the players. So
I didn't know what was needed. I didn't know the number of notes that was needed.
I wrote all your notes down on the sheet of paper
basically,
to tell you about all the players.
I was about to go out, and I said, Gregan, who does this play? Okay, he plays for them, yeah, and he's aggressive. Yeah, cool, okay, brilliant. Yeah. Cheers, bye. I'm off to go and be on Twitch in front of 2,000 people or whatever, or however many it was back in the
G-Finity. I think it did quite well at the start, didn't it? It was like 10K and stuff, yeah.
People loved it. So yeah, the big swooping crane camera comes on to face Tom Deacon. It pans out, and he's with Cole. The crowd's not full, but there's people sitting in an audience in the dark as well. You know, and you can't quite see the crowd because the lights are on you. Mm-hmm. I had that going on. I'm sat there, and the very first question, Tom, he didn't give me a softball. He didn't say, "Hey, how you doing, Cole? Good to have you. Rocket League, tell us about it." He goes, "Cole, Alex161, what does he bring to this team?"
Yep, what did you say?
I didn't know who the hell Alex161 was, Gregan. So I said, oh, well. I said, well, he's a jack of all trades.
Which was funny because he was the most undynamic player in the league. He was like
was
one
he
of the
aggressive?
Most specific. He was like a very weird upfield player who like did very specific things. Yeah. Very well, but didn't do most things very well at all.
Not only did I say, oh, he's a jack of all trades and say it confidently, I said, oh, yeah, he's a jack of all trades. You know, he's the sort of player who, you know, he's always, you know, there. And I just trailed off. And I swear to God, Tom Deacon went, okay, and Shogun, do you know what I mean? Or whatever, whoever I was next
that was
to.
Scary.
I got off that stage, and that, I think, because before then I didn't do the notes thing.
Yeah.
I did that segment.
Oh, I see. It was a notes.
Got off,
that.
And then I was like, Gregan, feed
Tell
me. Help me not do that again, please.
But to be fair, like, it's like that with a lot of shows. Like, when you first do a show, like, I've done a few events. So I've done the WCBC stuff, the Women's League.
Mm.
And, like, a lot of it, you are just scrapping beforehand to find out information. Because if you don't live and breathe through the whole league, or
True.
Even sometimes when it's a whole new league, you don't know any of the players or what their history is, because there isn't a history.
I have so much respect for esports hopping people. I've never done the esports hopping thing. It's always been fully in Rocket League. You know, I'll stream on the side. If I'm needed for an event, they'll ask me. If I'm not, I'll just stream. So that's fine. You know, I've not ever had to sort of reach out to Call of Duty and say, hey, if you need someone, I'm here. Yeah, okay, you got the job. Okay, 5 years of Call of Duty history. Let's quickly download that. Mm. Because if you don't get it right, and if you say the wrong name once, or if you say the wrong pronunciation, or if you get a bit of history slightly wrong, chat won't just go, I know what he meant. Mm. Chat go, what? Lol? Scump didn't win season 4? Do you know what I mean? And you'll be known as the guy that thought Scump won season 4 forever.
Mm. Yeah, well, I have that a bit now with the Pokemon stuff. Like, I'm now learning a lot, but there's so many people and so many names.
Do you know all the Pokemon, at least? Like,
I know the game, but it's the history and the players that's the hard bit, isn't it? And that's the... When we've had some people on stream, they'll be like, oh, this is Nico Alabas. And I'll be like, who? Was that surname you said that? They're like, you don't know Nico?
Oh, they don't.
He's literally the world champion. I'm like, what? My bad.
For God's sake.
You know, it's that
Can I just call out anyone who goes, oh, you don't know this?
But if you're
clearly not. No, that's why you're asking.
If you're a caster for an event, you're assumed to know. Like, you should have known who, and I'm not saying Alex161, because at that time he was a newer player on the scene.
Yeah.
But you should have known Doomsy at that time.
I did know Doomsy at that time. I mean, that was my different reason. What I should have gone was, I can tell you about Doomsy.
Yeah.
He normally uses the Dominus, has switched to the Octane recently, very aggressive playstyle, came from Sart BC. His first team was Team Rocket.
But like, do you know when I got chucked on season 2 on the desk, RLCS, you know what I said
there?
Yeah,
true.
I just said, oh, this.
In your t-shirt.
I said a fun fact about this team is they're the only team here that's not got 2 octanes and a long car. They're 2 long cars and an octane. Oh. And at the time, they're like, oh, you're a genius. Like, they genuinely often was like, I'd never even noticed that. And I was like, it's just an observation. Like, this is just a Dominus, a breakout on an octane where everyone else has got an octane Batmobile or whatever.
You notice things, mate.
And that, at the time, that was the kind of level of analysis. Like, it wasn't that deep. Whereas now, it's like stats, history, all these.
We're lucky
things.
We got a stats guy. So helpful.
So that was the start. Like, we'll fast forward. We've done quite a lot of deep dive into that early transition phase.
Yeah.
I think that's the interesting stuff from my point of view that you don't really necessarily talk about that much.
Mm.
But now you're RLCS caster, a lot of people's favorite duo, you and Stump, you know, people like the British comedy style. You also provide a lot of content. You get to do those videos that you used to make on your channel and turn them into content pieces for the RLCS. I mean, for Worlds, You did, how many videos did you do for that? It was like 20 plus, was it? I don't know if I'm...
No, it was similar to that because we had a qualification story. We had probably a documentary of something going into it. We had all the top 8 teams. We did like minute and a half long sort of stylistic videos, sort of themed thing. So like, you know, the stalking Panthers of FaZe, and then the VFX would be like a panther walking, and then it would pan out to the FaZe cars. Or, do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. One of those individual for each team. But that, I guess, feeds into what I've said, which is that I love working as part of a team.
Mm.
Now, I'm not a VFX guy. I'm not an editor. But, you know, alongside Stumpy as well, we can reach out to VFX people and they can get that done. And then our vision can be made. And that's what I love doing. You know, I guess it's, I write the initial script and then I guess I produce, or at least have a hand in production, you know, and then giving feedback. I think I'm good at like the timing of a video. You know, if I look back at a video and this segment's a bit long, I can give very specific advice of, cut this here after that syllable, bridge it there. And I look back and I think,
you like the rhythm.
Yeah.
And I think one of the fun things you've always done is you're quite clever with wordplay.
Love the wordplay.
And that's always, like, if you can tell when you've PPI. Written something. PPI. Yeah. I mean, you're always thinking of clever ways to use words. And I think that's been, for me, the interesting thing for you is that you are excelling in things that aren't necessarily your primary skill. You said writing is your primary skill. Do you foresee a world, you mentioned about AI, but do you foresee a world where you as a writer will become a writer of esports, like a top writer in the space? Or do you think that journey is too difficult to get to?
I'd love to be. I think that the videos we make, the documentaries that we make, you were nominated for an esports award, weren't you? You went to the esports awards show. I saw that earlier. That's what reminded me of it. So well done. Well deserved.
Best analyst of the year.
Well, you are fantastic. Truly, you
was
are fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah.
No, you are. Yeah. The Pokemon Carry stuff, on. Mate. Even if you haven't heard of Frederick Mahican. How can you not have him? He won the Pokemon Championship in 1972.
Called Frederick Mahican, Cole. Don't be silly.
Anyway, right. I would love for our videos to be nominated for an award. Mm-hmm. That's my goal, I think. I don't know how to go about that. I don't know how you sort of pitch it forwards. Oh, because actually, there's something I forgot to mention. Among all this, just after I went full-time and Sumpa was full-time with streaming, we got picked up by Jinx Esports TV for a TV show, which we did for a couple of years, a little two-man show. And the reason that we got found for that and asked to do an audition was we were nominated for UK Esports Streamers of the Year. And Stumpy found the link and he sent me the link. Going, oh, Cole, should I nominate us? And I was like, oh, just don't bother. There's no point. It'll be some, you know, UK ninja, some guy with 10,000 viewers. There's not even any point because we've got like between 50 and 100 or whatever views, right? And he was like, oh, I might as well. And I was like, oh, fine. And then, yeah, we didn't win, but we got nominated for it. And then our original producer, Dan, he said the way he found us was he wanted a duo. And he saw that the UK nominees that year had a duo and he reached out or watched our streams or whatever and then asked us. So that opportunity came because Stumpy ignored me and applied for us to be UK Streamers of the Year. and then we got the TV show.
You met Jinx there.
Met Jinx there. Oh, no, we didn't even meet them there. He reached out to us via email after because he retroactively heard our names or whatever. So, suffice to say, a big goal of mine is to have our documentaries nominated in some way. I'd love that.
I think it's one of those really tough ones where your documentary is a part of a bigger content piece, so therefore content of the year or whatever would get lumped in with the production, the desk, all that kind of stuff, whereas all the little standalone pieces, so they get uploaded to YouTube, I guess.
I think the categories, there's a couple of categories that the stuff we make could fit into. It's like content piece or content series. And we do have series. We've got these sort of minis that go on. We've got like a series of documentaries that we make. But also, you're right, if you bundle them all, then the subpar stuff that we make could, I'm hoping, be nominated. But I mean, that's just something I want to happen. That's by no means something that will happen. But it's a target that I have in my mind that I'm pushing towards.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm biased because one of my favorite content pieces ever is The Greatest Overtime, which was, I guess, what kind of created that idea you could do that for Psyonix, and you could pitch through, hey look, we made this, we'd love to do this for other stories. One of your greatest videos ever, and you're proud of it. I know you're very proud of it, because at the time you couldn't stop talking about how proud you were of it.
Oh god, you make me sound unbearable.
Because, but as you should be, right? Like everyone who succeeded,
yeah,
and like all of the little details in it. And I remember like every single time you're on stream and people would come in and be like, oh, how great it was. You'd be like, I'd love to do more of these.
Was this The Greatest Overtime you're talking about?
Yeah. And because people come and be like, oh, I love The Greatest Overtime. What are you going to do next? And you're like, I'd love to do a story on this thing. I'd love to do a story on this. We just need that next story. And now essentially every mini documentary you do is a mini Greatest Overtime about a different story.
It set the format. It set the template. So that video essentially, so we went to season 8 World Championships. Where you were there on stage, you made the grand finals because you are brilliant at what you do.
My team were brilliant, yeah.
That's a coach right there. Love it, Gregan. And basically there was an amazing overtime in that, which featured your
my
boys.
Team, yeah.
Your boys and
that was
Dignitas.
Most my heart's ever beat in my life.
I bet.
Yeah.
I want to ask you in a second how it felt to be up there. But basically, and then when I got back, I was like, these documentaries, these esports documentaries existed. I'd written them for Deserto and stuff like that. It's like, you know, the story of Gregan. Then he won this tournament. He lost that tournament. In the end, though, he won the World Championships. Hooray. Then they're normally about either tournaments or players or coaches, casters, whatever. Very rarely were they about moments. And I think that building up to a moment is much more cinematic. It's what we do in cinema. You know, when you go to a cinema, you don't see, you know, the story of this person, you hear about the story of a bank robbery featuring this person, you know? Yeah. So I tried to write a documentary which featured that and which hinted at this overtime, then told the story of what built up to it, which made the overtime so amazing. It wasn't just the gameplay, it was the context. It was the fact these teams, they played together, dropped each other, best in the world, up and comers, whatever, right? All that came into then led into an amazing piece of Rocket League. And yeah, I wrote that script and voiced it. It was the first time me, Stumpy, and Doomsy came together as a three, really, you know, in that form, in documentary form. And then the first time I saw the edit, because I don't know if you remember it and if anyone's seen it, basically it starts off with like, it's an aquadome, which is a map which has like fish and stuff around. And where I thought Doomsy would just show VOD footage, he'd gone inside the game and was looking at like a slow motion of a whale going over the voiceover. And then a car hits the ball at like that. And that didn't even cross my mind. So Doomsy took my words and my voice and elevated them so far beyond anything I could have imagined. And that is what made the video. It wasn't the script, you know what I mean? It wasn't the voiceover. It was Doomsy ultimately.
I think everyone together. Of
it is everyone together. He brings it from, you know, a 7 to a 10, you know, every time.
And that video was like 20 minute long, was it?
I think about 22 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that sort of format is now one that you've reproduced multiple times. You with the first one I can remember from the documentaries done now is First Land Back, the NA versus EU rivalry.
Yep.
Then you did Crowds.
Yep.
For LA for chanting.
That's right.
Then Copper Box was the sort of the history of that venue.
Although that one, so basically last season.
Oh, that was the one that one got cut.
Yeah. So basically last season, ahead of every major, ahead of every split, we'd think, okay, what can we make a documentary about or a video about this time? And we put our heads together and think of something ambitious. So EU versus NA, that was the sort of story of the first LAN back. The second one, the story of LAN was that crowds are back. Okay, let's do a video on the history of crowds. You know what I mean? It's sort of linked with the topic of the tournament itself. And then the third one was, you know, we didn't just want to do the story of season 5 that had been done so much, even though we were back in London, back in the Copper Box. So we wanted to do like a sort of package of everything you need to know. Fun, quirky, more ambition, you know, get us on camera. We're walking towards the camera. We've got the little lapel mics, you know, all that. Mm. And then unfortunately we forgot, I can't remember the name of it.
Gimbal.
That's it, a gimbal. So the footage was too shaky. So a lot of it just couldn't be used. Harsh lesson to learn, but we learned it. And thankfully, we were able to use the little video that we recorded with you as a standalone thing. So some of it saw the light of day, but a lot of it didn't. This season, it's been a lot more, instead of the story of the LAN, it's like the context of the LAN, it's what happens in the Rocket League pitch a lot more, which makes it easier to write, more reproducible.
Mm. So Gen G.
Yeah, so Gen G's story.
The unlikely story of
Jack and Nolly moving on. Yeah. And then that brings us up to now. Yeah, that brings us up to now.
Mm. Well, I kind of know what's coming next. I've heard teasers of what's
have
next.
You?
So I'm excited to see that next video. But these little documentaries, they're key to the entertainment. So many people love them. But not a lot of people will know what goes into them. And I think just hearing you talk about it, hearing all the different steps and the amount of time it's taking you to get to where you are now with all of the, like, iterations of streaming, making YouTube content, the team itself and everything like that. I think people will hopefully appreciate that a bit more now.
I hope so. Yeah. I adore that process. It's, if I meet somebody new who's a creative, the thing that I'll tend to settle on chatting about them with the most is process. I remember we had Sunless Khan, biggest Rocket League YouTuber. I think he's still the biggest.
I think Musty might be bigger.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Sunless Khan.
One of the biggest.
Exactly, one of the biggest. My favourite. And he...
There's no point covering your mouth on an audio.
What? No one can hear me, Gregan. he came on our podcast, Mine and Stumpy's podcast, and, you know, we had some questions written for him. And I said, so Sunless, what's your process of script writing? Do you know exactly the points you want to make, or do you just write and let yourself flow? And how long does that process take, or something? Maybe I don't know if that's specifically what I asked him, but I asked him something like that about the way he made videos, and his first thing he said was, no one's ever asked me that before. And I thought, I love that I've discovered a new question for him to think about and consider about himself. You know, that made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Well, I think that's the beauty of you guys and Sunless, is the way you produce is more similar to filmmaking than I guess making a little YouTube video.
I don't know how he does it himself, by the way.
He is an amazing man.
Yeah, he is an amazing man.
So we'll take a little break from talking about you and your journey. I told you before we started here, that there is a question I ask everyone, and you hated the fact that I was going to ask you it because you haven't prepared for it.
Yeah.
I ask everyone what their top five games are, and you are allowed to take that wording as you want. Is it the top five games in terms of influence on your life? Is it the games you enjoy the most? Maybe it's just games that you sunk the most time into. It's how you want to interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people who come on here typically have worked in gaming in some way, they often chuck the games that have been influential to their life in here.
Yep.
But whenever you're ready, give us your top five games.
Okay. I'll go from first to fifth, just because the higher up it will be easier for me to think of, and then I'll think more later on. Mm-hmm. So it would be remiss of me not to say Rocket League as my first one. It's changed my life. It's the game that I dreamed of between the ages of 16 and 22, or however old I was when it finally came out. It sort of means everything to me. It's my career. I truly adore it. So Rocket League, number one. Number two, I'll go with Crash Bandicoot 1. I know I joked to you about saying Crash 1 to 4 as my next five earlier on, but that's, you know, that's cheating a little bit. If I can't think of any others, I'll go with, like, Crash 2 later on.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Crash Bandicoot 1, I remember playing it... Actually, the Crash series. I love Crash Bandicoot.
Can't say series, you've got to say...
That's so harsh, because I want to include Crash Bash as well. I remember...
Dedicate a whole number to it then, mate.
I don't know if I can do that. All right, I'll touch on it. A little bonus, Crash Bash Avenue. Crash Bandicoot is the game that... It's the first game I played on my PlayStation 1. Which my dad got me, and I, you know, I don't talk about my dad very much. That's one of the things he did do for me. He bought me a PS1 and Crash Bandicoot 1. I remember playing it at his house. I also remember playing Crash Bash while he was at work on, like, a little black and white telly. He was a sound engineer, and he was doing his thing, which nowadays I'd much rather watch that. That's awesome. But at the time, I was like, oh, I can game. This is great. So I was there playing Crash Bash, and now I stream it. I also 100%ed Crash Bandicoot. On the PS3, you had like a PS1 emulator thing on the store. Mm. I downloaded Crash Bandicoot and we got 100%, and I was the man. Do you know what I mean? We all chipped in, but when there was a level that no one could do, for whatever reason, Crash Bandicoot, I wasn't the best gamer out of all of them, but Crash Bandicoot just vibed with me.
It's your game.
Yeah, it was my game.
So we got Rocket League,
yeah,
Crash Bandicoot. One.
Crash got- 1, but the series, like, lots of love for it. I've actually got like a Crash Bandicoot poster. That's my equivalent of these things on my gaming. Really? Yeah, like a sort of artsy one. Third, I'll go with Rayman Legends.
You are proper old, aren't you? He's like,
no,
old.
These aren't that old. These
but
are
like the characters, Rayman and Crash.
True,
like,
they're ones
legacy that have, PlayStation characters.
You're right. They're ones that have come back in modern times, but were there around the start of PlayStation. Have you played Rayman Origins or Legends?
No,
I love them. So they're on Steam or Ubisoft store or whatever the hell. Really fun, fast-paced 2D platformers. Rayman Legends in particular has got a lot of music levels. So it's got these little characters, and the little characters are going like in their little voice, and you've got to, like, you sort of jump and spin and punch to the beat, and then as you do it, you sort of complete the level to the beat, if you know what I mean. Like, if you do it to the song, you'll jump at the right time and you'll punch at the right time and you'll spin and everything just comes together and there's explosions. Like, I remember streaming that, just the whole chat just loving it. I'm not even need to say anything, do you know what I mean? We're all just enjoying this experience. And normally when I'm streaming, I don't shut up, do you know what I mean? So to have a game that keeps me engaged and keeps me talking is rare and special for me, I think.
I think when the game itself entertains people, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Especially at variety streamers, you can tell when a game is good.
Yes.
People are enjoying the game and not just the personality. So.
That's true. Which brings me to my fourth. I'll go with, and it's one that I would love to see. No, I'll go with something else. I'll go with SSX 3.
What a game.
Yeah, that's come to my mind. I'm actually, subscribed to the SSX subreddit. Oh, and really? Every now and then, someone posts like a run through of some level. Goes,
I'd love
oh,
to see that.
Yeah, check out the subreddit. There's sick runs and shortcuts that I thought I knew them all. You know, when you're a kid, like, I know everything there is to know about this game. And they're going over mountains that I didn't know you could go over. Do you know what I mean?
But it's like, unintended shortcuts.
Yeah. SSX 3 is another game that I was the man at. Mm. Basically, back in the days of sleepovers, you know, sleepovers when you're a kid, everyone played SSX Tricky. And I was never very good at SSX Tricky. Didn't have the game, couldn't afford it. So I'd always lose. My turn, oh, you've lost, your turn to pass it. And I wouldn't go like, oh, it should be my turn, I want more turns. Then when SSX 3 came out, I got it for Christmas. My auntie got it for me. I remember opening it up. And there's that also blue box with, I can't remember her name, one of the female characters. And she's sort of doing a trick. It's like, oh my God, I can't wait to play this. And the gameplay is slightly different to SSX Tricky. Like, you can hold Uber tricks, which is awesome and fun. And basically, I grinded that game. And then next sleepover,
punched them all in game.
Yeah, the knockdowns. Exactly. Yeah. The knockdowns were great.
Yeah, me and my brother used to love playing that game. Because I think it was...
Were you a three man or a tricky man?
We were three. We didn't have tricky. So I think we played it at a friend's house and then we bought it. But the reason why me and my brother enjoyed it is because one of the few games we were both pretty close at in terms of level. We had a lot of games where I would beat him every time, he'd beat me every time, or like most of the time.
Yeah.
That was one of those where I think we would sort of trade back and forth a lot. I think it's also
and that builds you both up as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think it's one of those as well, within a bubble, you feel like you're incredible.
Yeah.
Until you, obviously if you came up against someone who's actually good at the game, you're probably like, oh, this is not as fun anymore.
Probably.
But within a bubble, you feel sick.
Yeah, exactly.
You feel so good.
It's all about, because the shortcuts in SSX3, they weren't always beneficial. Because you do like trick runs on the same map, excuse me, you would sort of go onto some shortcut, quote unquote, and actually it adds 40 seconds to your time. Mm. You get so many points sort of like on a rail doing loads of spins and stuff like that. Which brings me to my fifth game, which is sort of a bit of a punt, really. There's a couple that I want to... There's one that I want to shout out and one that I'll probably go for. Can I do like a potential, like one that I can see climbing the ranks?
You can say whatever you want.
All right, fine, then I will. Yeah. Okay, the one that I was going to take a punt on would have been Wipeout HD,
okay,
which I loved. And one of my favorite gaming achievements, wink, wink, was from Wipeout HD, which I'm sure I'll tell you about in a second from what you told me. But I will go with Beat Saber because I know that it's a game. I've been working in my house for ages and my poor VR headset, I got the Meta 2, whatever it's called, and loved it, you know, brought it to my family, for my girlfriend's family's for Christmas. We had it on the telly, we were all playing, loving it. And then it's been put in a corner somewhere collecting dust and now I'm finally in the process of clearing out those corners, right? And I know that Beat Saber is going to become something that I fully focus on and become obsessed with. So Beat Saber is my fifth because it's sort of that emerging, you know, that sort of shout out to the up and comer.
I think you're the first predictive top fiver where you've been like, I reckon this game is going to be in my top five.
It's because I think most people that have come on this, they've probably got a wealth of 40 games that they've played in the last year. When I have my me time, I think gaming's too active for me generally. Like, I love streaming, I love gaming when I stream. That's why the ones I've mentioned to you are games that I played on stream, apart from SSX, right? But when I'm just sitting chilling, I'm a Netflix main. I'm a watching football on Sky Go main.
You put Netflix in your top five.
Oh, easily. Bandersnatch. Oh, boy. The Choose Your Own Adventure Black Mirror. That's going straight on there.
Well, that's a pretty solid top five. It's unique. I think it's also, it shows your commitment to the games.
Yeah.
You're not the kind of person who just dabbles in a game.
No. When I do find one that I like, I'll go all into it, you know.
And you mentioned that we asked the greatest gaming achievement.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about the time you won ESL weekly number 15.
No, I didn't know.
I never won
an ESL. Always
on the flip side.
Always lost to bloody flip side. Yeah, I told you, if Cooksier wasn't alive,
you'd be a pro right now.
Still be, yeah, exactly, because it would have changed my whole trajectory of life. Me and Dudes would have grinded to stay at the top. That's what keeps me engaged, not being third best.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, so what is your greatest game achievement then? Wipeout?
Yeah, I think so. Because I rarely go for like trophies or 100% or whatever. I mean, I got 1900 MMR in threes in Rocket League, but I don't want to say a Rocket League thing. And that was years ago.
That's
anyway.
That's cute, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. That was good. Were you around when I got the 1900? Yeah. I was well good.
Yeah,
when you coached me and I got that double in the Batmobile, you went, Cole's so good now. That's my greatest game.
Wait, did you get 1900 from my coaching? Or was that a separate time?
I don't know. It wasn't like in the immediacy after.
No.
I just happened to hit a solid run of Rocket League.
You started grinding, fell in love with the game.
Yeah, in and out. That's classic Rocket League, right? Yeah. I think the best... Oh, maybe the 100% that I mentioned for Crash.
Yeah, I was going to say 100% of your game is often an achievement. Because
on the remaster of Crash, if you die and go to a checkpoint, the boxes that you've got before, you still have them. Whereas on the PS1 one and on the emulator on the PlayStation 3, you had to do it in one go. So you had to go get all the boxes in one go and then you get the gem to get the 100%. Anyway, I would say my greatest gaming achievement, there was a trophy on Wipeout HD called Zone Zeus. Now in Wipeout HD, there was a game mode where you start off really slow and every time you lap, you go faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until you're sort of bouncing off the walls. If you hit it once, you just go bang, bang, bang and you're out. And Zone Zeus, I believe, was level 80. And I really wanted to record this YouTube video back when I got my, like, recorder. for PS3. And yeah, I finally did it. And I uploaded some of the failed attempts, ones where I was like 1 inch away and bounced that last time or got unlucky. And I finally did it. And I was like, yeah, beautiful.
So there you go. Zone Zeus. Fair play. Is that one of those trophies that's got a low percentage achievement where not many people have got it?
I like to think it's 0.0001.
Like to think. Like, that's always a great
no,
way
it will, it would be low. It was definitely rare. I don't know how rare, but definitely rare.
Can we get a... Do you reckon you can find that, Harry? Zone Zeus percentage achievement.
On Wipeout HD.
We can find this out right now. And it's when it comes
right,
up.
Place like, your so, don't say it. Place your bets. I reckon 2%.
Oh, so you think that high?
Is that high? Okay.
I mean, if it's as hard as you were saying it is.
All right. Okay. No, do you know what? I'm being too modest.
Do you think that means...
0.5.
Yeah, I was going to say 0.0 if it's as hard as you said it is, because otherwise that means... 0.5 is one in every 200 people.
If it's like 20%, I changed my greatest gaming achievement to 100% in Crash Bandicoot on PS1, the emulator, where if you died, you had to re-get the boxes.
I mean, I'm just hopeful that the way you've described it makes it sound as hard as it actually is.
It and was
I'm
going to
say
horrible.
Like 0.05.
Really? You reckon it's that
That means
low?
One in every 2,000 people got it.
There was one that was harder called Beat Zico, where you had to get a certain time, and I can never do that one. But that would have been my greatest achievement.
Have you managed to find it, Harry?
I mean, I don't know. It might be a website called PlayStation Trophy. I assume it's the average completion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What? For Zone Zeus?
Yeah.
Nah, it's not 34%.
No, I did it May 30 p.m.
Say again?
There's been four new entries.
I don't think that's true for the world. Like, honestly, go on YouTube, put in a little clip of Zone Zeus. It's not, I swear to God.
Maybe we haven't got the right stat there, but that's...
Look, I know you think I'm an idiot. I'm not that much of an idiot, all right? Okay. It's not
so the average player, I can't imagine, gets it at 34. Anyway.
No, 100%.
We'll get that fact checked. For the audio listeners, we've just had Harry, our producer, find out the percentage of that. But it's hard to find that, because on Steam, they have it quite easily, don't they, where you can see.
Yeah. I mean, this is going back to PS3 from like 2010, maybe. So that information's probably lost to time.
Oh,
yeah.
On another website.
Another website, psnprogrammers.com. 2.13, okay.
I still think it'll be lower, because I reckon that's the people that check it. That's my theory.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah,
it's definitely not 30, though. Like.
No. So we'll say about 2%, so that means 1 in 50 people get it.
There you go.
But if you look at a room of 50 people who've all played that game, do you really think it's impressive if only 1 in those 50 people have got it?
Yeah, when you put it like that, yeah, I think it is. I think it's just something that sticks in my mind of there was a challenge, I wanted to do it, and I did it.
I shouldn't downplay it. Like at the time, it probably felt incredible.
It did. I'm going to show you the YouTube video. I uploaded it.
Okay, we'll check that out.
It might even be on subpar, but in HD.
We might get this as a little clip, and we'll have a bit of Zone Zeusage.
Yeah, do. You can show my because I uploaded my compilation of failed attempts. There are some horrors there. There was somewhere like, oh, he's going to do it. I mean, bear in mind, these got like 50 views. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like the whole of YouTube was.
So your greatest gaming achievement was Zone Zeus.
I believe so.
Okay.
I think it was something that I wanted to do. I sat there and it took me days and I did it.
No, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Okay.
Well, they're still looking.
They're still looking. We're getting our research.
They're not going to stop until they complete Zone Zeus. I'll get the PlayStation 2 controller out, set it up to an emulator and hook it all up.
You mentioned about the Beat Saber and using your new house and it's gathering dust in there.
Yeah.
So you've been in a new house for a while. You've been fortunate enough through your hard work.
Yeah.
Within the esports industry to be able to buy a house, which is an incredible achievement. Both you and Stumpy managed to do that.
Not together.
You don't live in the same house. But I've always been very impressed by it, but it has caused more problems for you than it has caused enjoyment for the longest time.
Yeah.
What happened with you buying a house?
We bought a house in I think it was March 2021.
Talking about to give away your postcode there.
March 2021. And it was always going to be a doer-upper, right? You know, 130 years old, whatever it is. Hasn't been changed in ages. There was an old lady that lived there before that died. So it still had like a stair lift going up and rails everywhere and a seat in the shower and all those things. And the kitchen was like a thin galley kitchen next to a conservatory of a plastic corrugated roof and cheap wooden beams, so freezing in the winter, not even boiling in the summer because the plastic corrugated didn't amplify anything enough. So just freezing in the winter, right? Horrible concrete floor. And we saw it. We thought, oh, we can knock down this wall. We can replace this floor. We can put a new door in. We can paint this. Oh, we'll have to get rid of the wood chip because all the walls wood chip, the 3D little bubbles everywhere. And to our credit, before we moved in, so there was a 2-week period of we rented a house like a 2-minute walk away. And before our lease had ended on that house and the mortgage began on this one, there was about 2 weeks. Well, after the mortgage had already begun on this one, there was 2 weeks. So instead of moving straight in, we spent 2 weeks sort of going there every day doing DIY, chiseling away at this wood chip. Like you really have to like every bit, you're like sweating and it's horrible. Then you get a bit off. It's not just going, shh. Yeah. That's not how it works.
It's hard
right?
work.
Hard work.
For 2 weeks, you did that hard work. And then
pretty much, and then as well as moving all our stuff over, right?
And you're moving in after 2 weeks in this doer-upper. And then,
yeah, the reason we chose this house, by the way, is because I cast and commentate and stream. Mm-hmm. We need a thick walled area that's not next to a bedroom or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's why this place was theoretically perfect. But okay. Basically, every room's had to have stuff done to it. So my office, my stepdad installed this plasterboard that's like, honestly, it's about that thick, like soundproof plasterboard, for example, right? And then sort of half plastered over the top. But then because it's a house that you're living in, oh, I have to work. So then I work and then he's not available and no one's available for another 3 months. So it sort of stays in this semi-complete state until eventually one day, you know, we can make my office work. So we have to take all the stuff out, rip up the carpet, put on the floor. Oh, I've got to work the next day. It's not finished yet. Put everything back in the office, put all the soundproofing stuff back in so it doesn't echo, do that day's work, take it away. My stepdad can come back. Do you know what I mean? That constant 5 times, you're doing it 5 times as you live around it. Which is, you know, part and parcel of living in a house that you have to build up, right? So that's sort of okay. What wasn't okay was the builders that we hired, and we did everything right. You know, we hired an architect and a structural engineer, and they did their numbers and gave us the things that you can do this, make sure you use this beam, whatever, right? Got our builders, showed them these things, and they're like, they start knocking and chiseling and we're like, oh, it sucks. There's dust everywhere, but it's getting done. How exciting. We're going to have a lovely big kitchen, you know, and they'll install the kitchen for us. We've bought this kitchen, the secondhand kitchen for £4,000. It's worth about 20 with big, thick quartz worktops and stuff. So that's all in the lounge. So basically the lounge is full of kitchen bits. The kitchen is rubble. And then one day, I'm on a call with Stumpy, actually. We're talking business. The work's been going on for like 3 weeks or whatever at that point, maybe more. This is like 2 years ago. And I get a call from my architect. And I'm like, oh, I'll call him back later. And I get a text saying, wait, is the work going on? If it is, you have to stop. And I'm like, what? And he says that you must stop immediately. So we call the architect. Basically, it turns out the builders haven't told the architect. The builders haven't told the structural engineer. They haven't told building control. Because in our naive world, they were like, oh yeah, they're talking to each other. That's what they do. Turns out that's not it. You need to, if anyone's thinking of building work and is inexperienced, even if you trust your builders, have it in writing that they've spoken to building control. They've spoken to the structural engineer. Because our builders, they'd put in wooden beams in the new ceiling, couldn't have wooden beams because the structural engineer stuff said it had to be metal beams. And that means that it goes from painful, dust everywhere, but they're doing it. We can get by to stop. Just like that. And that pause lasted about 2 months. And it's not even that we knew it would be 2 months, because in those 2 months, constant messages to building control, arguments between the builders and building control and structural engineer blaming each other, going, oh, we didn't know this, yeah, but no one said that. Months go on, right? We have no water at this time, no downstairs running water. We're going to buy big bottles of water. All of this time I'm going on the RLCS, I'm, you know, going to Stockholm and saying, hey, it's me, Cole, I'm so handsome in my suit. But I come back to this rubble and this poor little dog that can only go upstairs and doesn't understand where his house has gone. And, you know, my girlfriend going a bit crazy and me too. So eventually, I mean, I don't even know in my mind how long all this has taken, but I've lived in that house for 2 years now. And only now is it in a point where pretty much every room we can go into and be. Do you know what I mean? And I get so bored of, and I less so now because there's progress, but every time I'd meet people, they'd say to me like, oh, how's the house going? And I'd feel guilty to say, not much change. I'd feel like they're thinking, oh, do you know what I mean? Like,
it's kind of like when someone's like, oh, how's fitness going? Yeah, I haven't quite got back into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they've told you about it at one point.
And they want you to be a success, right? I think that people feel that others don't want to hear their success. But I think that's not true. I think that more people don't want to hear others' failures because you think, oh, for God's sake, get on with it. And I was thinking, for God's sake, get on with it. Mm. You know, like I'd be out on... the only thing that took me away from this was when I could stream and work. As soon as it was over, I'd then be right back into the mire of it all, you know? I'd be out like for drinks with my friends and everyone's having a smile and I'm just thinking, I've got to get back, I've got to paint that corner. I said, I could do that. That's something I can do. I need to paint that corner. Until I paint that corner, the whole house is awful and I hate it. And then I'd paint the corner and guess what? Some other floorboard needs to be pulled up and fixed.
We would be at events, you know, we're away from home and you're thinking, I've got to be available for a call at any moment because if I miss that call, they might not be able to build for 3 months.
Exactly.
So you're
that.
Just constantly feeling like you're on edge. If I miss something, that's it.
It did put me on edge. It really did. Like, I totally... It's obviously, it's not that bad, but for someone who... Let's say someone who actually is homeless, and I think there are elements that were similar. There were times where I did not feel at home in any room, because even the rooms that we could go into, you know, stuff, because we have to have it somewhere, because it can't be in this room because it's being worked on or not worked on for months, right? And every time you feel like you're going to build up any momentum, it would just take it away from you because suddenly you've got to spend 5 hours doing this to your house. Or I guess, you know, like I say, the more extreme version, suddenly you've got to spend 5 hours traipsing or trying to do admin when you're looking around and it's just chaos around you, you know? Mm. I mean, in some ways, I guess we were lucky because there wasn't flooding. I mean, there was once, but there wasn't regular flooding, you know, and things wouldn't just like fall off in the night. Generally, once something was up, it was up until it had to be manually removed. But the reason I mentioned the homeless thing is that I can totally empathize of someone who gets stuck in a spiral and you have to break yourself out of it, but you've got nowhere to rebuild yourself and just go and be peaceful. Mm. You know, I totally feel for anyone who's on that spiral because it's so difficult.
I guess what you were talking about there is the when you're in a place where the environment you're in makes everything you do harder,
whether it be for any reason,
for any reason, or like someone, you can be in a family where the family environment's bad, or exactly. you could you go to school and you don't like the school life, or whatever it is,
have a bully, whatever.
Yeah, I feel like people often struggle to empathize with those who are in a position where everything is against them in the place they have to be, whether it is a workplace, a family home, or your own house like you had there. Because, you know, like I'm listening to this, I'm going, just go round the corner and rent another place or get an Airbnb or whatever it is.
In hindsight, we should have, but we also had the dog, which makes that more difficult. And also, every time we were thinking, like, oh, the builders are in tomorrow, or we'll go house at our friend's house, and while they're away, the builders said they're coming in.
Yeah.
And then they just didn't. And then that sends you right back down to the bottom, because I guess it's like, I don't know if there's a sort of proper psychological term of what I'm about to say that you might know, but it's like mentally budgeting. Mm. I'm mentally budgeting that I can handle this for a week because the builder's in on Monday. So it doesn't bother me. As soon as Monday hits and I'm texting them, they didn't turn up, all of that anguish just going.
You're sort of setting out a plan in your head. And then as soon as the plan out of your control just disappears. And that's what I was trying to say is like, in hindsight, why don't you just go live somewhere else for a bit? Well, yeah, of course. But
just burn the house down and claim the insurance.
Yeah, but every single week you thought it was going to just suddenly accelerate.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't. And that's the whole thing of like, oh, you know, if, you know, family life will get better. But then like 5 months later, you're like, well, it hasn't got better.
And I'll tell you what as well, it's when you look back and you think, how did I do that for that long? Do you know what I mean? You know, that final week, the last mile of a marathon. Where it's like, this is the hardest mile. And you look back and think, how did I do 25 of them? Bloody hell. You know, it's that last little stretch that feels awful. Mm. That feels really bad. And I feel like I've been in that last stretch of house arrangement for the last couple of months. But I need to remind myself that actually, there's a video that, did I show you this video?
I don't know.
A video that I found, I put it on my Discord and I showed it on stream of, it's me recording a washing machine, right? And I go... I must have sent it to my mates or whatever.
I think I have seen this.
Yeah, I go, this may not look like much, but this is the first time that we've washed clothes in our house for 2 months. And then I pan out and I turn to the rubble and I go, this is absolute heaven, baby! And there's just like stockpiles of crap everywhere and half a window that's collapsed. They're just like resting on its side and builder's tools. Like, hey, we got a washing machine. And I think it has come a long way since then.
Would you? I mean, it's always going to be a work in progress, but now you said you can live in every room. After this podcast, I'm going to be coming back with you to check out. God, you have me scared there for a bit, but I'm coming over to visit. and I get to finally see it.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're excited to share?
There's your nerves. Home? I part of it's sort of like trauma's way too strong a word, but there's a sort of nagging feeling like, what if he looks in that corner? What if we've forgotten that bit?
Pulls back the washing machine and finds what's behind.
Yeah,
it.
There is a slight anxiety about people coming into my home that I've never had before, which is not a nice feeling.
Okay,
but I know that I know that, you know, my girlfriend and I have put in enough work, hopefully, that it can be a pleasant place. Because we love hosting, both of us love hosting as well. Mm. We bought this house wanting to host Christmases, wanting to get friends over, wanting to sort of, like I told James Spot and the RLCS caster casters, when they came over for London, I was like, oh, if anyone wants to stay, my house should be done by then. If anyone wants to stay for a few days.
Yeah, I remember.
And James Spot was like, oh, I'd love to. I was like, awesome, that's great. Him and, I believe it was him and his wife who were going to. And then, you know, a month before, I was like, really sorry, mate, I'm going to have to uninvite you. And I felt awful because I would love to have had someone staying in our house, you know, yeah. From America, whoever it is. Like, how awesome is that, being able to show them the UK way of life and the lovely place I live? But yeah, I don't want it to come across that I'm, you know, oh, I'm so sorry for myself, because I realize that I'm lucky that I have a house, you know, and it could have been a lot worse.
It's always relative, right? Like,
yeah, true.
Because you're in this position where you're doing what for a lot of people is their life goal right now. They're looking, they're like, I want to earn enough money, I can buy my own house, have a family in the house, whatever it is, right? And you've just done that, and then it's given you 2 years of trauma. Like, for most people, they're going to be hearing that and thinking, oh God, I thought, you know, you should get a house. And you did get a doer up a house.
So we did.
You kind of set yourself up.
And it would have been all right. We set ourselves up for a 5 out of 10 and got a 12 out of 10. Mm. That's how I word it. We didn't think, oh, it'd be pizza and cream. We knew it was hard work. We knew it'd be setbacks. And, you know, DIY is such that you think, oh, today we'll paint the walls. Then you step in the corner and you hit, and suddenly it turns out all the floorboards have rotten. You've got to take them all up. And then that's another week. You know, that's happened to us, and that's part and parcel. But yeah, it's the delays, and like, we're trying to do as much as we can ourselves now, simply because we didn't trust any builder, which is such a shame. Because I bet there are builders watching this that are great people, but we've been burnt. It wasn't just the first ones, by another one who just stopped coming one day.
And a friend of ours, I don't know if she's spoken about it publicly, but a friend of ours that we've worked with was telling us about their house problems. And I remember hearing you two talking to each other about
it. Oh, in Saudi Arabia, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, well, okay, well, now that's just made you both feel more anxiety and hate towards it, because you're realizing other people are having these same problems.
I remember that while we were in Saudi Arabia, she got a call from her parents and something had gone wrong with the builders, and my heart honestly sunk for her, because I knew exactly how she felt. I knew exactly what had happened. She'd said to herself, I can deal with this until then because I'm going away and I'll come back, it'll be better when I come back. And I was there the moment that got stolen away from her.
Yeah.
And I was glad I was there, because I don't think anybody else
would have
been able to directly empathize in that moment, in that context, in the way that I could with her, because I'd felt that feeling. And it's so demoralizing and powerless. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to walk home from Saudi Arabia? You're going to walk home from Rotterdam and do it yourself? No, he's got to. Yeah.
Well, you're on the other side of it now.
I am, hopefully. And I feel so much for anyone who's going through anything like that. Yeah. It sucks.
Well, hopefully that all gets better. And I think there's going to be a lot of esports people as well who might be thinking about that with HQs, because I think building an HQ has got a lot of similarities. I know pretty much every HQ that's ever existed has been delayed.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, some of them probably have been on track because they've had a realistic goal. But, you know, when I was at Vitality, the V-Hive came a lot later than expected. At Guild, the Guild HQ came a lot later than expected. Endpoint have been looking for an HQ for a long time. They've only just recently done that. So like every HQ that's ever existed will have had complications along the way that delayed the whole process. So I think that's just part of building life. Something from the beginning.
It takes up a lot of life, doesn't it? It takes up sort of, you know, years at a time, and you look back and you think, I sort of wish I had this 2 years ago, but we've got it now. Let's make the most of it.
Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing
it. I haven't been too mopey at the end of this podcast.
I think a lot of people will hear that and be like, they could probably even compare it to something else in their life.
That's what I want them to do. To go, it was similar to me when I was waiting for this license to come through, or whatever it was that's holding them back that they can't control. You know?
Visas.
Exactly.
We won't talk too much about visas. I'm going to save that for a Shogun episode, because...
Oh, God.
I don't think any of us can really feel the pain like Shogun.
You know, you were saying to me beforehand, like, oh, I haven't got much notes for you because I know you. I was like, yeah, that's fair. Shogun, just be like, get your notes out. Visas.
Yeah.
Visas. You can just walk off. Yeah. There you go. There's the camera, Shogun. Talk to that for 2 hours. I'll be back soon. You just walk in with some popcorn and a little bit
poor
later.
Poor guy. I mean, just touch on that briefly. Visa situation in I'm sure it is the same in any life of walk where you have to walk of life.
Yeah,
life of walk.
Life of walk.
It's a long episode. Walk of life where you need to get a visa specifically for something.
Yeah.
Oh, it must be so scary because you are essentially out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And at any point, someone could say no.
For any reason.
It's like, same with like uni application, right? Uni application or
loan application,
job application,
mortgage application.
Yeah, all of these application processes, it's always send it off, hope for the best. And a lot of the time, it's your first ever time doing it. So you don't know whether what you've done has been the reason that you've not got it.
True.
Because like when everyone applies for a job, it's normally like several attempts and you kind of learn from each one, you get feedback potentially. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you kind of go, well, I need to do better. Whereas a visa application or a mortgage application or a uni application is typically your first one. And you're like,
you got to rely, you got to trust the people around you that will guide you well.
And sometimes that can be quite hard.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we're talking about the future. Mm-hmm. So we've gone through how you got to where you are. Talked about what you're doing now. What makes Cole, the little writing brain inside your head.
The little monkey hitting a cymbal.
Well, you do a little bit more than that when it comes to grammar. Never seen someone correct grammar so perfectly every time.
Well, you know,
you get great joy out of that, don't you?
Every full stop tells a story. People fear the semicolon. They don't know what it can do for them, Gregor.
I love a semicolon.
It can do so much for them.
To be fair, compared to the average human, I reckon I'm a top 1% semicolon user.
You're a serial semicoloner.
I do like a semicolon. Oh. I mean, I don't have the best understanding of it,
but you love it.
But I love using them. The way I see it, now correct me if I'm wrong, is I see as
okay.
If you have two sentences together,
uh-huh,
where in your head you could chuck a comma between them and it'd still kind of still feel about right,
uh-huh,
I'd just use a semicolon instead. If there could be a full stop, it could be a comma.
Yeah.
I see it as a semicolon. That's how I look at it. I know it's more nuanced than that, but it's normally if the second sentence is related to the first sentence. In some way.
I mean, it can be that. It can also separate items that have a comma in them in a list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, I went to the bookstore and I bought The Lion, comma, The Witch and the Wardrobe, comma, and Harry Potter. Whereas The Lion, The Witch and the Wardrobe looks like three things in the list. Whereas if the semicolon splits The Lion, comma, The Witch and the Wardrobe, semicolon Harry Potter, you know that they're different things in the list. That's another common use. But your example was correct. It's definitely a feeling thing, you know.
It's like the way I described it is, if it could be a full stop, it could be a comma, a semicolon is,
that works. It could also be a dash, it could also be brackets often, you know. All of these are interchangeable to an extent, but it's about the feeling. What does it guide the reader along in the best possible way to make them understand your intended intonation and meaning?
Because it is.
That's how I see it.
Yeah, yeah. So like Cole casts the RLCS. The RLCS wouldn't be the same without Cole.
Oh, yeah, because it's like an addendum to the first. That's nice. Well, thank you.
It's a semicolon, right?
Yeah, that could be. It could be. It could also be brackets. It could also be a full stop. It could also be a dash. It could also be a new paragraph. It could also be a different font. If you really want to go crazy, chuck some bold in there. Why not? All of these things, all of these techniques can be used that will elicit subtly different readings and tones. And often it's not till you read the whole thing through that you realize, oh, that semicolon doesn't work there. And then that's fine, that you get rid of it. People get so attached to it. People get so like, oh, there must be a semicolon there. Like, do you even need the second bit? I don't know, get rid of it. See how it reads about.
So I think semicolon, and this is just my personal preference, I think it's a great bit of punctuation for Twitter, because I think in Twitter,
true,
you often have a lot of short, snappy sentences that all link together because it's all one, typically it's all one comment thought about something, one thought, but you need to limit the characters. So I've always found semicolons to be quite good in tweets.
The worry is that people think you're a wanker for using a semicolon on Twitter.
That's true. That is also true.
That's the issue.
Yeah. Well,
I get told enough for using a capital letter at the start of my tweets by Stumpy.
Really?
Like the cool kids, they don't know full stop. It's just like, you know, it's lazy. It's intentionally lazy. That's what gets you the retweets and likes.
Fair enough. I like an emoji, to be fair.
Yeah, like punctuation as emoji, or emoji as punctuation as well.
Yeah, yeah. Creates tone. Tone in an otherwise toneless bit of text. Anyway, grammar. We'll move on from grammar. Let's talk about what's next, though. So this is where I'm kind of interested for you. So you sort of fell into this whole gaming esports thing.
I did.
Very clear through the story you mentioned earlier of, you know, you were set on the path of creative writing.
Yeah.
And then Rocket League came out and it sort of turned into this thing. You didn't even want to cast and that kind of happened. And now you're here as to put it frankly, one of the most successful people within Rocket League space, right? Like you are.
Thank you.
You are a face of Rocket League.
I still feel like when I'm talking to like Jorby and James Bot and Turtle, I'm like, oh my God, you guys are RLCS casters. You guys are never like, you're the actual proper ones. I still don't feel like that about myself.
A little bit of imposter syndrome there, you reckon?
To an extent, yeah. Not that I think I'm necessarily worse or incapable, but it's just I don't look at myself like, yeah, I'm an RLCS caster. Do you know what I mean?
I guess you see your value in other ways. Like, you know that you're a team player. You know that you're a content producer.
Yeah,
that kind of
it's
stuff.
Probably my greatest asset and my biggest weakness with regards to being part of a team that casts. Do you know what I mean? Like, I definitely could be better at sort of getting myself on the stage as well and going, hey, I'm Cole here to add to that joke. Do you know what I mean? I tend to just go like, oh, they've got it covered.
I mean, it kind of summarized that quite nicely was your Twitter account. The fact that for the longest time you were subpar but in HD and didn't even have your own Twitter account because you didn't care to be your own person. And Stumpy was like, you should make your own Twitter account.
That's true. I'm almost on 7,000 followers now.
Congratulations. I thought that was what was going to bring your podcast back.
Yeah, I thought people would sort of get the joke that obviously if I'm saying that, the podcast is coming back, but either people didn't care or they didn't get it.
They just didn't follow you.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So this is what I was going to ask about is what's next for you. So you're bringing back your podcast.
You've tried to ask me that about six times. So I'll ask me the question, Gregan.
Semicolons. So Subpar Pod EC, you were one of the first Rocket League podcasts out there. And again...
You stopped it because you
couldn't be bothered anymore.
No, not that we couldn't be bothered. No, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So Stumpy and I made our first podcast, 10,000 views. Wow. On YouTube, right? Second one, only 5,000 views. Not that on the head. It's dying. It's dead. This was back in like 2016 when neither of us
were fresh and funky and
us had the first clue how the world of the internet worked. We're like, people aren't really, no one's coming back. Stop that.
So Subpar Pod EC.
And then 4 years later, we release it like, oh, we got 400 views. That's awesome.
Officially, unofficially.
Best podcast on
We should have done that properly. Officially.
Unofficially.
The best podcast on
the internet.
On the internet.
Behind the game.
Yeah. But beyond the game.
Beyond the game.
So you created this podcast. It was just you and Stumpy being yourselves. Yeah. It was quite a lot. You being educated by Stumpy around RLCS.
Oh, the start you're talking about. Yeah.
And then you've had amazing guests. And I think...
And you and me.
And me. Yeah, you've had amazing guests.
Say that. I said we've had you, haven't we? And you said and me. So you
Multiple times, I think.
Yeah.
Am I the most guesty guest?
I don't know. It's two.
Johnny as well.
Have you been on twice?
I think I've been on three times.
Have you?
Thrice. Maybe. But that's coming back. Yeah. What's next for you? So Subpar Pod EC is coming back.
Yeah.
Why are you bringing it back?
Because it feels like it's time to. Basically, when we started making these scripts, we had these sort of ambitious things. Oh, we're going to present this one to camera, all that. It would take bloody ages getting clips, writing it, speaking to all the people, because we did a lot of interviews in them. And then I'd have to transcribe those interviews. So I had like a 10,000 word doc of transcriptions, 40 minutes each per person for 20 people.
AI can do that now.
Probably true. But could it get all the right quotes and put them in a coherent script?
No,
exactly. For now, give it another 6 months. But yeah, so I was always doing that. It took mad time. This season, it's we've been able to use our time more efficiently, so I can stream and stuff. And with the podcast, basically the other night, I did the hard sell to Stumpy. I said, Stumpy, it's time. And I've never done the hard sell with you, Stumpy, because he doesn't react well to the hard sell. No. It pushes him away further. And I said, haven't I been a good boy not doing the hard sell? And he went, yes, cool. And I said, is it time to bring the podcast back? And he went, okay, cool. So I bring the podcast back. It's because I love it and I want to be out there more. You know, I don't want to go out on stage in the RCS and then slink away. I don't want to be like always consciously and constantly in everyone's face. Mm. But I do want to be more active in each conversation, you know. And I think the podcast is a way to do that.
What I'd say with this podcast, I've learned that yes, I'm trying to build content. I'm trying to get views or whatever it is. That's what every content piece is to an extent.
Yeah.
But for me, having, episode 25, the conversations I've had with those 25 people have taught me things. I've learned stuff. I've gained experiences. I've shared experiences, all that kind of stuff. So by doing a podcast, you and Stumpy might have conversations that elevates other parts of your content. It might make someone listen and go, I didn't realize that's what they did. You know, like all of those little...
Yeah.
The
we might, like you, become better people.
Maybe you'll become a better person.
I genuinely that's so quite touching. That's quite lovely,
even if no one listens to it, just you and Stumpy having a somewhat structured conversation on camera for an hour or two.
It's good practice. That's actually why I started streaming again, because I stopped streaming for ages with all the videos we were making. And one of the main reasons that I started streaming again was to sort of hone Cole, because Cole's very different to a mill. Do you know what I mean? I'm not like, if I'm at a pub with my mates, I'm not like, hey, everyone, gather around, listen to me, ever. I've never been like that. If the attention falls on me, I'm not shy of it and scared of it. But if there's something to read, I won't be like, hey, give it to me, I'll read it. Someone else will read it.
You're a team player, as you said. You're not the center entertainer of a group.
You're
the one who sets up the center entertainer of the group.
I don't feel the need to be. I like it to fall on me, but I wouldn't ever admit that. You know, that's my thing. But I think that, you know, Cole needs to be able to put himself in that conversation a bit more. And streaming just lets me hone that character and sort of jump in without thinking in a good way, you know, a bit more. And it has helped me with that. And the podcast is the same, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, it's interesting. It's been with the team thing, actually, like a group. I think one thing people don't necessarily see from the outside is how close you, myself, Stumpy, Shogun, and Johnny are in terms of, and CJ's kind of naturally come into that group of the EU casters. And I think looking back on when we were speaking about Gfinity earlier, I think that was a massive factor for it, because from the start, we weren't competitors. We were a team.
Yeah.
And it was, we'll provide for you, you provide for us. We'll all learn from each other. Mm-hmm. We'll work together. You know, like the EU pre-show, all that kind of stuff. It's like there's a lot of places where you're set up in a way that you all work together. And I find that interesting, because within the space of talent teams, Rocket League is very unique in the sort of camaraderie.
Have people on this show told you specific stories about the opposite at all? Like,
no, I think it's just, I guess, you know, some of the hosts have said about, you know, oh, we're always competing with other hosts,
right?
But, you know,
like word competing, which is,
And it's like, it's a performance role, right? You're competing with other people. How vital to you is the success of Rocket League commentary been down to that teamwork element being such a big factor?
Oh yeah, it certainly helps. And I mean, you'll know that at RLCS shows and stuff, we are always pushing each other in a good way. You know, we'll come off and go, oh, that was amazing, oh, you casted that so well, I love that line about XYZ. I can't imagine not doing that. I remember for the Stockholm major, I had the idea of, hey, during the minute long extra timeouts, we should go to Gregan. It's like, hey, we should come to me for that. It's like, Gregan would be perfect for that role. And you've said the same thing for me to do XYZ, or for Shogun to do XYZ, you know? I think
it's also with those kind of ideas, it's kind of like the selflessness of it, right? That idea from you,
it's better for the show.
You came over to me and then we started sort of creating that idea together. And then we pitched the idea as a team to Psyonix or production. Yeah, right, that's how we want to do it. Same thing with all the pre-shows, right? Someone comes up with an idea, we come together, we kind of format it and go, right, this is our idea. It's not, by the way, Psyonix, came up with this.
Yeah, because that just must be so exhausting. My God, imagine having to track everything you have done or said in a little notebook. Like, oh, actually, I'm the one who pointed out that he was on 9.8 kills per split. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you've spotted something that can help the person who's about to cast the finals. Let them know it. The show's better.
And it's, the other thing that was really interesting is hearing from RLCS casters how excited you are for each other to get finals.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a typical one.
When Daz and Stacks got it, I found out they'd got it for the most recent Winter Major, the first thing it was message them both. Like, oh my God, guys, so cool.
And like
it
is cool. In other games, that's like, oh, well, hopefully I get a final soon. Hopefully I get a final soon.
Yeah.
And I think it's definitely changing, especially in some, you know, like I think the Valorant team is quite close.
Good.
So I don't want to talk on behalf of them.
Yeah.
And like with the Pokemon team I'm now working and everyone's really lovely.
I was going to say, make sure that you, and I'm sure you would anyway, bring that positivity to the Pokemon.
Yeah,
like, you could be the catalyst of that.
So there was a comment when two of the other casters were doing the final.
Yeah.
I went and got them water because they didn't have water.
Yeah.
And one of the producers saw me going to get water and he'd worked another broadcast. So he went, that's weird. A caster supporting his other casters, you know, and it's stuff like that where like that, because that's what we would do, isn't it? We'd always,
obviously, because we're humans, we're human beings.
And like, I'm not trying to say here, like on behalf of every other talent team that it's like that, because I'm sure there are talent teams that have amazing camaraderie, but historically,
the fact that surprised him, that makes me so upset. That makes me upset in the same way of when I've got friends that go like, oh, I wanted to take Saturday off and my boss wouldn't let me. for no reason. It's like, well, why? Because if you'd let your employer take Saturday off, they'd have worked twice as hard on Monday, not without needing to. They just would have wanted to.
Yeah.
It frustrates me to no end where it's like, oh, I couldn't get that £500 pay rise, so I'm not able to go out. It's like, if you're the employer, why wouldn't you give the £500 pay rise? Because that's surely a lot cheaper than paying an employment company to send you someone new, train them up, and then have them leave and keep repeating that process four times a year.
Yeah. I think it is changing a lot, but I think the history, like back in the day, there was quite a lot of toxicity amongst talent. And I think that's one of the things that Rocket League has always seemed like a family with the casting team.
And it truly is. It really is. Like with in the Discord, there's sort of like there's a channel that if you see something that could help anyone, like a tweet or something, we'd put it in the spicy tweets channel, and then everyone, whoever sort of then cast that person, go, oh, he said on Twitter that he didn't like this player. Whoa, there's the spice. Do you know what I mean? Right, there's no hoarding storylines or hoarding stats or hoarding facts. I just can't imagine. I wouldn't want to do that.
I guess the question comes though, what happens when you're competing against each other? What happens in a world like, for example, there's an off-season tournament, and then it's like who gets the jobs?
I think that's where you have to trust each other to be decent people. The answer of who gets the jobs is whoever that particular employee wants, which, as you know, isn't a review on you as a person. Do you know what I mean? There's no objective scoreboard. If someone wants Stumpy and not Cole, that makes sense. If someone wants Cole and not Stumpy, that makes sense. You know, if somebody wants Shogun and Johnny and not Cole and Stumpy, whatever, right? It comes down to purely the eye of the beholder. And there are lots of beholders. There are always more beholders.
That's a nice place to end it. But we will go, just before we end, I want to say thank you again.
Thank you.
As I mentioned at the start, I was very excited for this one because I love the way your brain works, because it's so different to the way my brain works, but also so similar in many other ways. And so having people who you can work with and get the best out of each other is always been good. And I think that's why you've done so well in the casting team. As we mentioned there, the team is a team because everyone can support each other. And I'm glad to hear that the biggest challenge in your life is sort of coming to an end with the house.
Yeah. And I can actually invite people over and mean it.
And maybe start doing a podcast in your spare time now, because you have spare time.
Exactly.
So excited for the Poddy C. Hopefully get to be the most guesty guest again.
Yep. All right.
Hopefully.
Get you on.
I mean, I'm not doing anything with my life right now, so why not?
You're doing this, mate. What do you mean? You're off. You're flying away tomorrow.
Oh, that's true.
The past is new.
I am flying away tomorrow. But we do end with the same question for everyone. And that is, I haven't told you this, so you're very nervous right now because you don't know what I'm about to ask. What does gaming mean to you?
Ooh, gaming or games. Oh, that's what does gaming mean to me? Again, I think that my answer is probably different to most, because I imagine that most people get on this, like, oh, gaming's everything. It's a common answer. Escape. Yeah, but gaming isn't everything to me. I probably wouldn't really identify as a gamer. I like to game, but it's not like, oh, I love, you know, all that sort of culture of it all. To me, I think that gaming is more of a means to an end to community. I love, truly adore the subpar community. I love the Rocket League community. I love Rocket League as well. But I think that were I to never be able to play a video game again, it wouldn't bother me that much, really. Like, you know, I'd pick up jigsaw puzzles. I'd find something else that would replace what I do when I game. But if I were to be told that I could never go to a gaming event again, or never be able to stream again, or never be able to check Discord again, or never be able to you know, join my mates for a game of FIFA or whatever silly game they've come up with, that would make me incredibly sad. You know?
So community.
It's community. It does mean community, yeah. It's the link to people that are amazing that I'm very fortunate to have found.
Well, thank you very much, Carl.
No problem. Thank you, Gregan, for having me on.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.